You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy.
And right now, here he, and we had to make room. He's added on to his entourage. Here's Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
Hello, my friend.
Beautiful day. Sunshine and
you know,
we're a little cold, but it's nice.
We're getting spoiled.
We are.
We're getting spoiled.
We know it's coming.
You know somebody's going to stand at the end of the hall and jerk the carpet out from underneath us.
So I got to tell you, I heard from a guy named Mark Scobie.
Okay.
And he is a professional team roper.
Yeah.
And he wrote to me and told me he'd read my book.
Yeah.
And he appreciated the fact that when I was describing team roping, like when they have a roundup,
yeah,
that I was spot on with how I described team roping. So
well,
I appreciated
good.
That.
Good.
And folks, if those of you that do read my book, just go to my webpage and send me a comment. And I'd appreciate it if you would also give me a review. Preferably 5 stars.
Anyway, you want to be just like the restaurant, huh?
So much for that.
There you go.
So,
no, whatever happened to Wiebel Fuster Budweiser or whatever?
Oh, he's still over there.
He's still listening?
Yeah, he's still in Germany.
Okay.
So today we're going to talk about a trapper by the name of Osborne Russell. This guy, I really like him because he wrote a book called Journal of a Trapper.
Oh.
And folks, if you want to read a really good book, it's called Journal of a Trapper by Osborne Russell.
Can I say one thing before you get rolling?
Yeah.
And I pardon my interruption, honestly. You, a long time ago, did a really good story on here about Bass Reeves,
yes,
that sheriff.
Right.
The Old West sheriff. And now they're running a kind of an episodic series on Bass Reeves.
I think I've seen that. Yeah.
It's excellent.
I'll have to check that
out. I commend you on that.
So here we go. So picture this. There's 4 buckskin-clad beaver trappers. They thought they were just having the ideal life around their camp, but they didn't know that there was a war party of Blackfoot Indians looking down through the brush.
This is not good.
No. So again, picture this. All around them, there's these lodgepole pines, nice campsite. They've got a nice green meadow offering good grazing for their horses. Just an ideal, beautiful little spot to camp. And where they are right now is near Yellowstone Lake, up in that area.
Okay.
And you've been there, and I have. But the Indians were patient. They didn't see any need to get in a hurry. They had a deep respect for the men with their guns, and the white hunters kept close at hand these guns, and they respected that. But by the time the Indians crept up on their little encampment, the trappers were well settled in. In fact, 2 of them had set off into the forest to shoot an elk for camp meat. So there was just 2 of them left at camp.
That's not good.
So meanwhile, the trapper named White lay down on the soft mattress of pine needles to take a nice, peaceful afternoon nap. The 4th trapper was Osborne Russell.
Okay.
The guy that I'm talking about.
All right.
So Russell had finished running his beaver traps. He was spending a quiet hour working on his equipment. Then taking his rifle, he started down to the lake, and he just enjoyed a beautiful day. He actually went for a swim in that ice-cold lake.
Went for a swim?
Well, a bath, whatever you want to call it. But Russell was one of these guys that actually really appreciated the beauty of the Rockies and the mountains and the rivers. And he wrote about that in his books. But in fact, he was known to climb a mountain all the way to the snow line simply just to sit up there on a granite ledge and maybe sit there for 2 hours just looking out over the peaks and the ridges and the mountains and just kind of contemplating nature and the universe and the Rocky Mountains in all its splendor.
Wow. Okay.
So he was kind of a sensitive guy.
Uh-huh.
So
kind
of
like you.
Yeah.
Very sensitive.
So on this day, beside the shore of Yellowstone Lake, like say, he stripped off his buckskins and laid his rifle down and leaned it against a pine tree. He then went for a lazy half-hour bathing in the icy mountain lake.
A half hour?
Half hour. He dressed and wandered back to camp. It must have been about this time that the Blackfeet came upon the little camp and hid in the bushes.
Oh.
Determined now to capitalize on their good fortune.
Uh-huh.
Here they had, you know, there's just two guys in there.
Yeah.
So he was kind of hungry after a swim, so Russell went first to the spot where they had spread out their stock of dried meat, and it was about 40 yards from their bedding area. And there he removed his powder horn and bullet patch and laid them out carefully on a log.
Not good.
40 yards from where they're...
Okay, 40 yards.
Carrying the meat, he moved back toward where White was still sleeping and sat down and ate.
So he left his gun.
He left his powder.
Oh.
His powder and, yeah. So he went back where White was still sleeping.
Okay.
And he kindled a little fire. He lowered himself onto the pine needles and just started to enjoy a smoke with his pipe. And but, you know, as he lifted a glowing stick from the fire and touched it to the tobacco in his pipe, he raised his eyes to scan the campground to reassure himself that everything was in order.
Well, you get to the point.
But all was not in order. All was not in order. The Indians had begun to move, and Russell saw the heads of a few of them.
Uh-oh.
As they slipped through the underbrush toward the horses.
Uh-oh.
Of course, they wanted horses.
Yeah.
Russell grabbed his rifle and yelled, "Indian!" which brought White out of his sleep, as few other words could do. You know,
yeah.
He was immediately awake. Now, both trappers now had their rifles in hand, but neither was close enough to his powder and lead.
Oh, my goodness. You're not supposed to take that off.
Well, in fact, one of the Indians was already escaping with Russell's powder horn and bullet patch.
All they
had was what they had in their rifles. Oh.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Why?
Well, the two trappers were now completely surrounded by the yelling Blackfeet, and they were down to one shot each. They cocked their rifles, picked a spot in the circle of Indians, pointing their guns at the enemy, and began a desperate effort to stay alive. And here's what Russell said. Quote, "The woods seemed to be completely filled with Blackfeet who rent the air with their horrid yells." Now, the Indians, who were directly in front of the trappers' guns, kind of gave ground.
How close were the Indians?
Oh, just, you know, 30, 40 feet.
Oh,
you know, they were close.
Okay.
So, but it opened a 20-foot gap through which the mountain men ran as they headed for the forest.
Well, what did the Indians have? Bows and arrows or what?
And hatchets, you know. And stuff.
You make it sound really gruesome. Yeah.
So White had only taken a few steps when he felt the impact of an arrow penetrating his right hip. Russell yelled at him to yank out the arrow and keep running. And even as he spoke,
easy for him to say.
Even as he spoke, another arrow found its mark in his own hip. White had an arrow that he pulled out. Russell had an arrow in his hip. And moments later, both trappers were still running at top speed in spite of the arrows they had taken.
Ooh.
Another arrow thudded into Russell's right leg.
Oh.
And you can imagine the pain was severe, so much that he stumbled. Well,
The floor of the lodgepole pine forest is littered with a lot of downfall. You've been in mountains where you've seen, you know, where the downfall, the trees are just thick.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So Russell, they stretched across the log in plain view of the Indian who had scored with the second arrow. As the warrior leaped the short distance over the fallen logs and brought his war axe high above Russell's head, the trapper rolled quickly to one side. The axe came down where his head had been, and Russell jumped to his feet. He and White continued their mad scramble through the forest from log to log while arrows continued to whistle past them.
Oh, this is not fun.
So when the trappers had gained a little distance on the yelling Indians, Russell whispered to White. Both men whirled about and took dead aim at the Indians. The Blackfeet saw this, and they hid behind trees, giving the trappers time to get another 50 yards or so between themselves and the Indians.
Well, didn't the Indians realize that they were really just one-shot Barneys there? They only had a shot apiece?
They probably didn't realize that they didn't have but one shot. So they now came to a place where they had to make a stand. Well, Russell's leg gave him a lot of pain, and the loss of blood had weakened him. They dropped into kind of a fortress of fallen logs, which hid them from the Indians who were searching. They were going all over looking for these guys, and they went around their hiding place. Now, Russell's plan was to make a final desperate stand, die like men, and take at least two of the Blackfeet with them. So he whispered to White to take the first Indian who turned his eyes on them, and he would get the second. So here they are. They're down, hidden among the deadfall.
Okay.
They rested their rifles on fallen logs and tried to calm their breathing to steady their hands. The Indians apparently believed that the two trappers were still on the run. The first group, perhaps 20 warriors, scrambled past without even glancing at their hiding place.
Now, were they?
Went right past them.
Right by them.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Right past them.
You'd think they'd have followed the blood or whatever.
Well, yeah, but I guess they thought they were still running, so they just kept going.
Oh, my.
So a second line of Indians raced through the woods on the other side of where they were hiding in this little nest of logs. And even though they were within 20 or 30 feet of the trappers, they did not see them. So picture this. They're in the middle, a group going on one side, another group going on the other side, but they didn't see him. Well, the two files of Indians came together again beyond the trapper's hiding place and raced on through the woods and out of sight. As long as Russell and White could hear them running, they didn't move. They stayed still.
Oh, I would too.
Finally, they crawled out of the log pile and hobbled off toward the lake. A quarter of a mile distance, Russell had to keep stopping because his leg was injured.
Well, I mean, weren't both of them?
Well, the other guy's wound wasn't so bad.
Oh.
White. Anyway, the Blackfeet doubled back, and the trappers could hear them yelling as they took possession of their camp and everything they owned, including the horses, the food, the skins, everything they had. And after moving along the lake for a mile and a half, Russell had to stop. He couldn't go any farther. He was wounded the worst.
Yeah.
Well, with some of the pressure off and time to reflect on their chances, White began to come apart. He started whimpering and saying he would never get out of this situation alive.
Oh, you mean his mind started?
Yeah, he started to think I'm done.
Maybe he was losing his arm or leg or whatever.
No.
Oh, okay.
But Russell was more experienced and a leader by nature. He had once been as green as his companion, but a person learned quickly in the wilderness. You'd better learn or you did not survive.
Absolutely.
Well, he felt somewhat responsible for the safety of White. The kid had come from a Missouri family that pampered him and never gave him much to do besides horse racing and gambling. So Russell gave White kind of a verbal lacing down.
Really?
Yeah. Chewed him out. And it was something like this, quote, "If you think you're going to die, you'll die, sure enough. But I'll tell you this, I'm not going to die. I can crawl through this place on my hands and one good knee. And I can kill two or three elk." He didn't say how they were going to do that without bullets.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Made a shelter. He said, "I can make a shelter of skins, dry the meat, and live on it until I'm able to travel again."
Yeah.
He just laid it out on him.
Yeah.
You know? So
he's kind of the Bill Belichick of the old explorers.
Yeah, just really laying it on
him.
So, but anyway, as I said, White was in better shape than he thought. His wound was basically superficial.
I see.
That bad.
So wait a minute. You're not being fair. Have you ever been shot with an arrow?
No.
Okay.
Anyway, after spending a miserable night beside the lake, they moved quickly into the pine forest just in time to escape the Indians now coming in their direction.
Oh, not again.
They watched from the pines as 60 Indians came on the scene, singing and talking, but the Indians were interested in a herd of elk swimming in the lake, Yellowstone Lake. The Blackfeet killed four of the elk and spent the next several hours dressing them out and packing the meat so they could carry it with them.
Wow.
So they just kind of watched and saw.
And these guys were freezing.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't all that cold at this time of the year. But so now the trappers began their long journey back toward Fort Hall.
What happened to the other guys?
Okay, we'll get to that.
Okay.
So they got to Fort Hall, which is, of course, folks, if you don't know, Fort Hall is about 8 miles north of Pocatello, Idaho.
Yeah.
So southeastern Idaho. So first, however, they returned to their campsite and they found one of their companions. You remember two of them went off into the forest to hunt.
Yeah.
Okay. One of them had come back after everything had settled down.
Didn't he go with the Indians? He's okay.
Yeah. So the Indians had chased the other two men when they came back searching for Russell and White. The trappers had escaped, but the fourth member was now lost in the forest, and he eventually made his way to Fort Hall. Okay, so now, in the following days, Russell and his little party of three, there's three of them now, trying to get back where Russell could get medical attention. Of course, they were traveling lean and hungry. They made miserable little camps and shivered through the nights.
Well, no, the other two had horses, though, didn't they?
No, because the Indians took all the horses.
Oh.
But the other two had gone off hunting just on foot.
I see.
So they now imagine this. In spite of his injuries, they covered 20 miles the first day and 30 miles the second day. Their return route took them across the Grand Tetons. Well, you know where Yellowstone Lake is?
Yeah.
And they had to come back through the Jackson area, through over the Teton area.
With a couple of arrow holes in his leg?
Yeah, yeah. So they came down the West Slope, then across the Sagebrush Flats.
How many miles altogether?
You know, from Yellowstone, that's got to be, what, over 100?
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. So the last 2 days of their journey, they covered more than 65 miles through country where game was so scarce that they were completely without food, no food. Well, Russell's condition grew steadily worse until he finally had to stop every few minutes to rest. With several miles to go, the party met a trapper from Fort Hall who took Russell the remainder of the way on his horse and brought him finally into Fort Hall.
Oh, my goodness sakes. And they didn't have any. Well, the other trapper had powder and lead.
Yeah, so he maybe could have shot something.
Shared something, yeah.
So once in the fort, Russell rested. He ate well. He applied some salve to his wounded leg. And after only 10 days of recuperation, was back setting beaver traps.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine? Well, we've talked about
that. If that happened to you and I, we'd be lucky if we could turn on the remote.
That's right. So, a little bit about Russell.
Yeah. Is he legit?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Russell, and he spent a lot of time in the area we know, up around Island Park,
yeah.
Henry's Lake, that whole area, Fort Hall, Snake River, this whole area. But he was leading the life as he preferred it. This Rocky Mountain splendor through which he wandered was a world apart from the life he once knew. Beaver trapping was his deliverance from the known and predictable, his escape route from the dull life. The adventure, scenery, freedom, and promise of riches from fur justify the hours of hardship and the risk of life. Now, earlier, he had actually come from here out in the West from Maine.
Oh, that's a big difference.
Yeah, and he began to dream of more exciting adventures in distant places. But he actually, his first plan was to go to sea. And at the age of 16, he ran away from home and shipped out on a ship. But the life shipped out on a ship. That makes sense, right?
This is rehearsed.
But the life of a sailor confined to this boring ship was not for Russell.
I couldn't handle it.
And when his ship tied up at the harbor in New York, he jumped ship and turned inland. The next we hear of his travels is from his book that he wrote, Journal of a Trapper. Talks about the fur business. He was working for the Northwest Fur Trapping and Trading Company in the Minnesota and Wisconsin area, actually, to begin with.
Really?
And from there, his trails led west, and after some years, he appears in the Rocky Mountains, ready to begin his career as a beaver trapper. Unlike a lot of his mountain men buddies, Osborne Russell could read and write, and unlike most, he began keeping a journal, which is this book.
I see.
And it's been a valuable book because it shows the valuable records of what it's like to be a trapper. So anyway, in his book, he says, quote, at Independence, Missouri, on the 4th of April, 1834, I joined an expedition fitted out for the Rocky Mountains and the mouth of the Columbia River by a company formed in Boston under the name and style of the Columbia River Fishing and Trading Company. And he worked for them for about 18 months, at the rate of about $250 a month.
Wow.
But before long, he became a free trapper and soon proved to be one of the best free trappers ever.
And he kept a diary of all
this. Yeah. And in 1843, after 9 years as a mountain man, he moved out of the Snake River country, away from Fort Hall, and headed for Oregon. He later moved to California. His health failed, and he died in 1892. And this is kind of a sad part of it. Toward the end of his life, he couldn't feel, he had no feeling in his lower part of his body.
Oh, my.
And they think it was from severe rheumatism, from standing those hours and hours
in the cold water,
icy streams, you know, doing the beaver trapping.
Regardless of the fact the guy was shot full of holes with arrows.
Yeah. So that's Osborne Russell.
Oh, and I got to have more about him.
Yeah, he, you know, that book, Journal of Trappers, just an excellent book, folks, if you can get your hands on it.
And you've got it.
I do. I do have that book.
I'll tell you what.
This story comes from a book called The Mountain Men. So this is kind of an excerpt out of his
book. They were
tough. Oh, they were tough. Yeah.
Can you imagine you and I doing that?
Oh, well, first of all, running.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's interesting. All I can say is I love that story. Thanks.
Thank you.
Come up with another one next week.
I will do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, there he is in all of his radiant glory, our friend, Dr. History.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.